From the Sky News Centre at 6, a man who lied about a murderous paedophile ring involving famous people, prompting a £2 million police investigation, has been jailed for 18 years. 51-year-old Carl Beach repeatedly told officers he had been abused in the 1970s and 80s by a string of high-profile figures. Daniel Janna QC is the son of the late Labour peer Lord Janna, who was falsely accused. He's furious.
Well, they've made us physically sick. When these allegations came out, we knew they were false and they'd been proved to be lies. Evil lies for money. So it's caused destruction in our family. It's very hard to get over this.
Yesterday looks to have broken records as the hottest day ever in the UK. Provisional temperature readings from the Botanic Gardens in Cambridge show a high of 38.7 degrees Celsius. Environment scientist Angela Terry says if the record's not already broken, it will be soon.
We're coming into August now, and if it's not this year, it'll be in the next few years. The temperatures will keep going up because we keep producing greenhouse gases into our atmosphere, which trap more of the sun's heat.
The hot weather has led to travel problems on the railways and at airports across Europe. A technical issue with a radar that caused huge delays at Heathrow and Gatwick has now been fixed, but passengers are being warned of continuing disruption. A man's died after he was hit by a car and dragged along the road in what police are calling a horrific attack in southwest London. Detectives have launched a murder investigation because they think the 25-year-old was targeted in a premeditated hit and run in Chessington. Labour says it's been calling for police numbers to be increased in England and Wales for 3 years. The new Prime Minister says efforts to recruit 20,000 more officers will start within the next few weeks. That's the latest.
What's good, people?
I'm David.
BCFM.
This is Bristol. It's Friday, 6 o'clock. Welcome to BCFM's Politics Show. I'm Tony Gosling. Helping me review this week's news is Councillor for Knowle and Lib Dem leader in Bristol, Gary Hopkins. Irish Republican Labour activist Martin Summers is here too. After the 7 o'clock news, a new-ish president in Malaysia and a new documentary on the 2015 Downing on a flight from The Hague to Kuala Lumpur of MH17 over Ukraine. MH17, A Call for Justice, the film, and it's produced by freelance Dutch journalist Max van der Werf. And you won't be seeing it on the BBC. Why? Because it implicates the fascists in Ukraine and NATO and the Dutch authorities in falsifying evidence that Russia did it, covering up the real culprits, whoever actually did shoot the plane down. Plus, tanker wars, latest. It was this time last week, wasn't it, that the Iranians boarded a British registered tanker. And we go back to 1987, just before the first Gulf War, when US warships were escorting Kuwaiti tankers by sending them out ahead in case of mines, with the American warships chugging along behind. Not much of an escort, if you ask me. And YouTube have been censoring my videos this week, classifying the linking of Israelis to the 9/11 attacks as anti-Semitic hate speech. And Yukiya Amano dropped dead this week. Poor Yukiya. But who is he, I hear you say? Only the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Authority, charged with the oversight of the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA. And no special tariffs on Huawei, just the FedEx's postal company is refusing to deliver their mail. Just another provocation against China from the Trump administration, jealous of a Chinese tech company with a market lead. That's all in the second hour, after the US-owned Comcast News at 7. On to our news review in a minute, but first, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows of 15 Celsius and dry this weekend. Temperatures around 22 Celsius, the highs. Light cloud with some sunny spells and light rain on Sunday. So a little bit less wet this weekend than we forecast last weekend. Next week, that's highs of 24, plenty of sunny spells and some showers midweek. Next weekend, that's the 3rd and 4th of August. Highs of 24, mainly sunny, so the heat and the sun should continue, it looks like, apart from Sunday, a bit of rain. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. So joining me to review this week's news is Councillor for Knowle and Lib Dem leader Gary Hopkins. Hi, Gary. Welcome to the Politics Show.
Hi.
We're going to start this week. Well, obviously, Boris is the big news of the week, but we're going to start here with Marvin. Marvin Rees, the mayor, the Labour mayor. He's managed to get all but he's going to be the candidate, isn't he, again next year, next May, in the mayoral elections.
Yes, a lot of Labour members were trying to get him deselected, but the process was too difficult for them to enact that.
Tell us a bit about that process. Well, what do you mean?
Well, it requires all sorts of different organisations. There's ward parties, there are various socialist societies. As an example, the local Labour Party here in this area actually called a meeting to deselect him. To call for an open election. So he had to face other opponents. But they were one short of having a quorum at the meeting. So despite 85% wanting rid of him, it was recorded as a no vote.
I mean, his campaign for re-election in amongst the Labour Party was standing really on a ticket of various things, including having saved the libraries and stopped the council tax reduction scheme from being taken away.
Well, it's beyond parody, isn't it? I mean, I think it was Tom Lehrer who said when Kissinger won the Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, that's exactly the same situation with Marvin now. At the debate in council, nobody was paying any attention to what he was claiming because he's just such arrant nonsense. He apparently has massively improved house building, but the actual numbers are about half what they were 10 years ago in Bristol in terms of affordable houses as well as overall houses. He was claiming to have saved the libraries. He's claiming now to have delivered the new waste recycling centre in South Bristol. The money's been sat in a pot for 6 years, and because they're now starting to make plans to get a business case together, he's claiming that he's done it. Well, I mean, it's in the same way that George claimed when he was up for re-election that he'd built the arena. I see no arena.
It's a pity that Marvin can't be here to answer some of these charges, Gary. And I mean, ideally, as a journalist, I'd much rather have him answer rather than me. But he doesn't want to come on the radio. He just simply will not come on this show. We see him on the BBC from time to time and on the podcasts. And he's done his address to the City Council. But why do you think he refuses to sit on the seat next to you here?
Well, I think he refuses to go anywhere where he might get some awkward questions. He wants to be in control of how the message is put across. I don't suppose he'd have 100% confidence of that happening here.
The scrutiny boards on the City Council are one of the places where the Mayor, Marvin Rees, Labour Mayor, is held to account. And here is from last week, Scrutiny and Management Board, where Marvin talks about some of the boards he's set up in order to help run policy in the city and actually direct spending so that he can decide where money gets spent, with these boards making some recommendations to him. The only trouble is, of course, that there is no actual councillors on these boards, and they're rather self-selecting, aren't they?
He banned the councillors. Apparently a councillor from another party, not from ours, I won't say who it was, from another party, he claims was rude, and actually the person that particular council was thrown out by council security officers from the meeting that was actually happening of one of those boards. And since that time, because he claims that one council was behaving badly, all councillors were banned.
Okay, I mean, so ridiculous. When you say it's but behaving rudely, is that sticking one's tongue out, or what exactly does that constitute?
I don't know, I wasn't there, and what Marvin constitutes as behaving rudely is normally actually challenging him on things. I've got to say that the most rude and obstructive and downright abusive person I've ever had to deal with has been Marvin over the last couple of years. He regularly harangues the public gallery in the council, which is quite ridiculous. So him claiming that people have been rude is just, well...
Anyway, let's go to the scrutiny board, where Marvin talks about some of these boards he's been creating to bypass councillors.
What we've done in these boards is pull together a remarkable range of people who were saying, we will come together and work with Bristol to agree what we want to get done. This is about saying that the solution to the challenges facing the city will not be dreamed up by to be perfectly frank, and ever since I've come in, councillors have been at pain to express their frustration with full council and cross-party working. It won't be dreamed up from what goes on within this council or even council officers. We will only be able to come up with the solutions to Bristol's challenges and the challenges that we're contributing to on a national and international level by working with the wider city. And that's what we've done. In terms of attendance, if I can say, we did have them open at the beginning, but actually, and I talked to one particular party leader, we had some councillors come up and started to behave as though the city partnership meetings, where we were working with outside partners, were city council meetings where councillors were trying to take chunks out of each other and be very rude. And what that meant is that one of the important things when we bring people together is that we maintain an environment in which people are putting solutions on the table, not trying to score points. So we knew we had to safeguard that space. And to be honest, I'm even feeling it now. If people are
so
up for entering into genuine partnership work, and being solutions focused, then they can engage. But I would also say you have a whole machinery in this organisation that gives you the opportunity to engage in political debate, and I say you should make best use of it.
So, Gary, that was a question that was put by Anthony Negus from your group. And Marvin, I think I answered it quite robustly there, saying that you're just not solutions focused. If you're looking for a solution, then Marvin's happy to work with you, but you're not.
Well, the trouble is that if it isn't his solution, then it isn't a solution as far as he's concerned. Everyone asks the wrong questions, according to him. The whole world asks the wrong questions, apart from Marvin. And it's quite amusing that one of these boards is the Transport Board. Do you know, Marvin actually has an advisor from First Group, First Bus Group, sat in his office telling him what to do, and that board is actually run by First Group.
I doubt he's telling Marvin what to do. He's just saying, look, this is what's possible and this is what's not. I've worked for the bus company. I know you want to get them sorted so I can liaise for you.
Well, I'm afraid when we found out about this chap, we asked for a meeting with him. And he came along with a minder from Marvin's office, so he knew exactly what was being said. And the chap, all he wanted to do was to give propaganda against franchising, which is what is needed in this city. And basically, it wasn't even objective criticism, because every system has its weaknesses. No, he was feeling in this propaganda to Marvin, and he thought he could do exactly the same to us.
Amazing. Anyway, Martin Summers, you're a Labour Party member. Marvin Rees, the Labour mayor there, saying that solutions won't come from councillors. They're coming from outside on these boards, people he's inviting onto these boards, like businesses, basically, in the city.
Well, this is basically the problem with a mayoral system. He's got the power to do that. He can overrule councillors. That's what the Tories set up. Mayors are allowed to do that.
But I mean,
whether
that's
right or wrong.
Well, that's what the city voted for when they voted for a mayor.
Well, they didn't vote for a mayor, did they? As Gary well knows, it was a minimal turnout.
Isn't that the fault of people like you who should have voted against it but didn't bother
to
turn out? Well, not enough people did, surely.
And crucially, the Tories who campaigned for it are now admitting they were wrong.
Yes, it's a silly system. And I think, obviously, Marvin comes in for a lot of personal criticism because of the way he's taken hold of this role. But the role itself is...
But George did as well in his
day. Well, yeah, but George also campaigned in favour of it. And Marvin's taken over where George left off, which is that basically mayors are supposed to be like sort of CEOs running, Enron. They can sack people, they can do what they want, and it's supposed to get things done. And, of course, the subtext of that is get the things done, which the powerful in the city have always wanted. Wanted to do, but all this boring democracy has got in the way, and that's the fundamental problem what we're dealing with here.
Anyway, the mayor gave his annual address last week, and here is a little extract from that where he talks about Channel 4. Although I thought Channel 4 decided not to come to Bristol, apparently they are.
We're also the new home for Channel 4. We hosted them here on Friday. They'll be opening their offices in October, not only bringing a huge economic boost to our creative sector, but also joining with us as a partner in bringing greater diversity to that sector. And we've also launched the One City Plan. The door's open. You've got ideas? Email the boards. Get involved. Many of them are statutory boards. Some of you probably even knew about them before because they've been around for some time, even though you seem not to. But you can absolutely welcome to reach out to any of those boards and share your ideas and your input as you like as you feel to. So we came into office with a commitment to delivery, and I believe that's what we've done. That's what we're seeing. That's why we're attracting the support of government, investors. It's why you see cranes on the horizon. We committed to Bristol being a city that was inclusive and sustainable. These characteristics are writ large in what we've delivered in our corporate strategy and the One City Plan. And finally, I'd say every year we make the same offer. If you want to get stuff done, if you're prepared to put aside the ping pong of chamber politics, and you want to come and say what you actually want to get done for Bristol, and you can tell me what you need from me to help you do it, let me know. I'm all ears. We'll work with you, and we have included people in those pieces of work sometimes until things begin to disintegrate. We want to hear from you. But if you want to play headline chasing, bite my ankles, talk the city down, and spend time searching for small problems with big plans, then I'm afraid I have to leave you to it. There's too much going on for us to get tied up in that. But whatever your conclusion on where you want to stand, we're going to continue committing to our promises for Bristol, and we're going to continue delivering for Bristol. Thank you.
That's Marvin's annual address from last week from the full council meeting. Gary, I looked up on Channel 4's website. It says actually that they're going to Leeds, not to Bristol. Do you know any more about this?
There are smaller offices, about three, I think, around the country.
Because there was a big bid. Bristol was involved in a bid to try and get Channel 4 to come to Bristol. And they said, no, we're going to Leeds instead.
That's correct.
But Marvin's sort of saying, well, actually, they are coming here.
Well, there are smaller, sort of like regional offices, not their main head office, which I believe one of them is coming to Bristol. There's about three or four of those in addition to the main head office, which is going to Leeds.
Channel 4 themselves Channel 4 staff are saying up to 90% of their staff are going to quit rather than move to Leeds. Martin, do you think this is anything really going to happen here in Bristol? We're going to see Channel 4 News doing a little bit more reporting from Bristol?
I don't know, because it's just a matter of factual stuff. It's either true or it isn't true. But it sounds as if Gary knows more than I do, that they're going to put a small office here, but we're not going to get the headquarters. That's what it seems to be.
Also, Gary, this use of we came into office, this is a little bit almost royal, isn't it?
Well, I mean, Marvin is Queen Victoria. Interesting concept. But basically, there has been a massive failure. I mean, I listened to that speech, and it was full of stuff that just wasn't true, stuff that they claimed to have succeeded on, and other stuff where, you know, you saved the libraries. Well, no, you tried to shut them, and you got stopped from shutting
them. Well, he says the door is open, you can always email these boards, but that doesn't actually mean the door is physically open, does it? You can send an email, and then you can just hit someone and hits delete.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, he's listening even less than George was. And Martin's right, it's a function of the position.
So what
he's stuck at the top of an ivory tower. He's not listening to anybody.
So what is this One City Plan? Are you just a bit sore with it because it excludes you, Gary?
No.
What does it mean? What is One City Plan?
It means nothing. Basically, it's a whole load of waffle for saying, we're all jolly, we're all working together, and we don't need a council, and Marvin's wonderful, and all his partners are working together. It's absolute baloney.
Martin, do we need a council? Well, maybe Marvin's right.
Well, I think this is the problem, that the whole concept of having a mayor is bringing what you might call private sector ideology into local democracy. It's the idea that if we've got somebody in charge to get things done, you know, bang heads together and all the rest of it, as if it's D-Day and we've just got to get the Marines into shape and get them onto the beach. Local politics isn't about that. It's about building consensus. It's about, and that's why for many years we had a parliamentary system where you become the leader of the party that wins the election, and then you form a coalition and you have to negotiate with various people to get anything done. And of course, you know, the developers and the other people who want to get things done, arenas and all the rest of it, that's far too boring and long-winded for them. They just want somebody to do it for them, and that's what the whole concept of mayors was brought in from the United States by the Tories. And stupidly, the Labour Party bought into it. And I don't think Sadiq Khan's got any power, really. I mean, one of the problems is they give them all they're supposed to do all this stuff, but they haven't actually got any power to do anything. And then they pretend they've got the power.
Okay.
It's silly.
So the leader of the Conservative group on Bristol City Council, he replied to Marvin's speech by saying he thinks democracy is being squeezed out of the city.
I have seen in the last 12 months we've had the gerrymandering of the Constitution. We've seen that. So that it limits the scrutiny. We've seen the debacle over chief executive pay and all of the rest. We're going to discuss that later. Again, a choice, I might add. We've seen the debacle over the arena and the choice there to go from the city centre, put it out on the outskirts of the city. A choice made against the express wishes of the majority of this chamber and the majority of citizens. Now, if this... It was against the majority of this chamber. If... Let me repeat this. If that model had been made under the cabinet and leader system, then colleagues, I suspect you'd have made a choice too, because I don't think a leader of a cabinet would have remained in office either after the arena or after the chief executive payout. I don't believe that at all. There were checks and balances in that system. There are none in this system at all. The Prime Minister position has more checks and balances than we have here in Bristol.
Is that true? The Prime Ministerial system's got more checks and balances than Bristol? Marvin can do exactly whatever he wants and no one can stop him?
Yeah, I mean, the Prime Ministerial system does have its disadvantages, but at least the Prime Minister can be removed when a number of his party actually realise he's gone loopy.
As we've just seen, in fact, maybe the next one will go loopy.
Well, it will take long, I don't think.
What about this whole business of the auditor's report, which came up after that at full council last week? What's the background to that, Gary?
Well, basically...
We rely on our auditors, don't we? They go through the books and they say, well, hang on a minute, this is not on, and this is wrong, whatever.
Well, I think, actually, auditors have been getting a bit of a bad name for turning a blind eye to stuff that was wrong. Fair play to the auditors, the outside auditors for Bristol City Council, because they refused to accept the lie that the ex-chief executive had been paid off in accordance with what she was entitled to. They said, that is not true. The trouble is, that they couldn't prove exactly what happened, because after the complaints started coming in, the shredders got busy. Emails got deleted all over the place. So there was a report came out which showed that there's huge gaps in terms of the council's record.
I mean, surely they're copies of emails at some point.
Oh,
no?
You must be kidding. So basically, it's impossible without actually...
So this is something the auditors actually did go through and try and find these emails?
They tried to find stuff, but it was missing. A lot of stuff had just disappeared.
Ooh, potentially, that's covering up a crime.
And they weren't required to do a forensic examination of the situation, which would have involved interviews to check who had deleted what and when and exactly what happened. So they had to rely on the documents that they had in front of them, and they did as much as they could do, and they proved that the council had acted to misdescribe their accounts, and they forced the council to change. Now that's very unusual, but they did that. But
how many sets of accounts were there this year at Bristol City Council?
Oh dear.
Too many.
I mean, it's how many emails there were and how many changes in contracts there were and all that sort of thing. Really, really messy.
Okay, so what the comments on that were made by... This is just after the annual address at full council last week by Jeff Gollop from the Conservative group.
I would like to ask Councillor Gollop to speak on behalf of the Conservative group.
Thank you, my Lord Mayor. In reading this report, I find that I agree with most of what's in it. The only problem is that I disagree fundamentally with what is not in it, and I ask that we have a vote on this, and if we don't have a vote, I wish my objection to be registered in the strongest possible terms, because I do not wish to be associated with it. And I'll tell you why. I'm sure everybody's read paragraph 10. The Audit Committee agreed 4 specific observations, and I'll concentrate on 2 of them. Should similar circumstances take place again, officers involved would be subject to disciplinary action, and members of the mayor would be subject to a referral to the monitoring officer under the members' complaints procedure. My Lord Mayor, if that's the case now, why wasn't it the case then? Why was it not the case? Because we are not talking about rocket science here. We are talking about basic, fundamental business practice where integrity and ethics should be the basis of the actions that are being taken, and there should be transparency and the appropriate documentation. They were all lacking. Paragraph 2 says that all decision-making in relation to the employment of senior officers to have proper documented trail for audit purposes. Now, I can only conclude that that means they weren't there. My Lord Mayor, this is a disgrace, and it is an embarrassment that members on all sides of integrity are supporting, acknowledging that we got this wrong, but pretending that by approving and noting this documentation, we can brush it under the carpet. My Lord Mayor, that's not acceptable. I won't be associated with it. Thank you.
Sorry about the audio quality there. I think Jeff Gollop was getting so heated he was breathing onto the microphone and making a kind of a sort of wind noise of some sort. But anyway, Gary, so is there going to be any action after this? I think that's really what Jeff is saying there. He's hinting that this is simply not acceptable, but nothing's being done about it.
Well, I think the only way it could actually happen now is a complaint to the Ombudsman, whether people are proposing to do that. We'll see. The trouble is that some of those emails and records and paper records have been shredded and have disappeared. So actually doing anything about it is going to be progressively more difficult. And bluntly, it was a disgrace at the time. I think most people in Bristol have heard of it, know perfectly well what happened. It was an embarrassment.
Just to explain what the problem was and how much money was involved, just go back to that, please.
Well, basically, a woman was taken on as chief executive despite very strong advice against. 7 months later, she suddenly disappeared, which we thought was very strange indeed. That had been after lots of accusations of bad behaviour, etc., had gone on, in which the media had been asking awkward questions. And then we heard a few weeks later, through the good offices of Private Eye and the Rotten Boroughs, that she'd left with a large payout, which amounted to £98,000, which the mayor claimed was contractual and that she was entitled to, and which the auditors said, no, that's not true, that is a lie.
Fascinating. Well, anyway, maybe the police will be taking over where the auditors left off. Let's see. Anyway, last Prime Minister's questions this week between Jeremy Corbyn and Theresa May. Theresa May is heading out.
Mr. Speaker, let me conclude by welcoming some of the Prime Minister's notable U-turns over the last couple of years. The cruel dementia tax was scrapped. Plans to bring back grammar schools were ditched. The threat to the pensions triple lock was abandoned. Withdrawal of the winter fuel payments was dumped. The pledge to bring back fox hunting was dropped. And they binned their plan to end universal school meal, free school meals for 5 to 7 year olds. The Prime Minister has dumped her own manifesto. Given that her successor has no mandate from the people, no mandate in which to move into office, doesn't she agree the best thing the Right Honourable Member for Uxbridge could do later on today when he takes office is to call a general election and let the people decide their future?
To the Right Honourable Gentleman is no. And if he wants to talk about people ducking manifesto commitments and commitments made during a general election campaign, can we remember what the Labour Party, the Right Honourable Gentleman, said about student debt? Going to abolish student debt after the election? No, he rose back on that promise. He was committed to Trident. What does he say after the general election? No, he's not committed to Trident at all. He has broken promise after promise to the people of this country. But I say to the Right Honourable Gentleman, as this is the last time that we will have this exchange across these dispatch boxes. I was going to
say that it is the strength of our British democracy that the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition have these exchanges across their dispatch boxes every week at two swords' length. No quarter is sought and none is given. And that's as it should be in our adversarial parliamentary democracy. But he and I are very different people and we're very different politicians. I think we approach the issues we face in this country in different ways. I have spent all but one of my years in this House on the front bench trying to implement the policies I believe in. He has spent most of his time on the back benches campaigning for what he believes in, often against his own party. But what I think we both have in common is a commitment to our constituencies. I saw that after the terrorist attack in Finsbury Park Mosque in his constituency. But perhaps I could just finish my exchange with him by saying this. As a party leader who has accepted when her time was up, perhaps the time is now for him to do the same.
Well, she says that, but he's not going to, and it's just a rhetorical point, isn't it?
Yeah, but what about what's the wider point that she's making there about Sir Jeremy Corbyn really being a sort of campaigner from the backbenches, whereas she's her political career has been... She's saying that we're very different people, very different politicians. She actually does stuff. He just sits and waves flags from the background.
She's very much part of the establishment, is she not? Jeremy Corbyn isn't, and that's his appeal.
And is he actually going to get any power?
Well, we hope so. Let's have a general election. That's what he called for.
What do you think, Gary? I mean, this is a terrible thing to ask you, I know, but if you had to choose one or the other of those two, who makes more sense to you, Corbyn or May?
Well, neither of them, obviously. That's why, for some while, that the country was terrified into voting for one to keep the other out, and vice versa. And now all of a sudden they've realised they don't have to do that, and as a large percentage of people are looking for any alternative rather than Boris Johnson or Corbyn. And bluntly, I think Corbyn, the way he attacked her on the last Prime Minister's questions, was absolutely stupid tactics. Surely he needs to be attacking the person coming in, and if anything, giving her a bit of sympathy and saying it was all these rebels that were causing all the difficulty.
Martin?
Well, I'm not going to second-guess Jeremy Corbyn's tactics here.
I mean basically, he did quite a good job there in marking all the different U-turns that the Tories have done over
the
last
term. She said, don't forget, we've got a fixed-term Parliament Act, which the Liberal Democrats helped put in place, and she said there wasn't going to be a general election, then she said there was going to be a general election, and she basically lost it, and that's why we're in the mess we're in. If she just stuck with what she said...
Well, actually, Jeremy Corbyn lost it, but he didn't quite... She didn't quite lose it, did she?
No, but she didn't win it, though, either. And that's why the Democratic Unionist Party have got the country over a barrel, because Sinn Féin don't take their seats.
And well, that's... a few more by-elections, and I don't think they'll have power to keep the Tories in place.
Well, she'll see. But the DUP's vote is solid.
Someone Martin supports, I would imagine, is Yvette Cooper, and she had this to say about what would happen if there was a no deal to our national security here in Britain.
Cooper!
Yeah!
We have disagreed on many things over the years, but the Prime Minister knows that I have long respected her resilience, her commitment to public duty and her seriousness, and also her work on national security. And I can reassure her that there is much to be done from the back benches. But she will also know that I said to her once that I believed she was not the kind of person who would take this country into a chaotic no deal, not least because of the advice she had had on the risks to our national security. I am fearful about her successor, so can she reassure me that she really thinks in her heart that her successor will take those national security warnings as seriously as she has, and if he doesn't in October, will she speak out?
Here, Prime Minister.
I say to the Right Honourable Lady, first of all, I have every confidence that my successor will take all the issues that he needs to look at in making these decisions and others across government as seriously as they need to be taken. But can I also say to her, I'm sorry, and I will say this, She's absolutely right that I've always said that I believe it is better for this country to leave with a good deal, and I believe we negotiated a good deal. I voted three times in this House for a good deal. I spoke to the Right Honourable Lady about this issue. If she was so concerned about the security aspect of no deal, she should have voted for the deal.
Well, I find it rather odd, all this national security stuff. Wink, wink, nod, nod. We all know what we're talking about, except we don't know what we're talking about. It's just silly. There's no real threat to our national security by leaving the EU, because NATO's still got this exactly where they want us.
What about information sharing amongst the European countries?
That's not really an issue, Tony. It's basically, I'm a Remainer, as you well know, but it's basically a red herring of enormous proportions. The real problem is NATO, which is about to start a war in the Persian Gulf.
Nothing to do with the EU at all. Why did Yvette Cooper, who's complaining about not facing a no deal now, why didn't she vote for Theresa May's deal?
Because it's a Tory deal, and that's the way it works. And
in actual, so it's just playing party politics.
Well, it's playing party politics because that's our system. It's an adversarial system, as
you
said earlier.
What do you make of this, Gary?
Well, it's not up to her to vote for it. It's up to May to bring forward a proposal which a majority of people in the House of Commons can actually support. I'm afraid she put down red lines right at the beginning of this, which meant that cross-party cooperation was never going to be happening. So she was handed the impossible job in the first place, that she was never going to succeed. And then she proceeded to make it even more difficult. So, you know, her demise was absolutely inevitable. But I do think that if Cooper there took a far more sensible line in terms of saying, you know, the real problem is not you, it's your successor, which is entirely the case. And in terms of national security, it's not a matter of the spying, etc., but there is a problem with crime. We have a European arrest warrant at the moment, which actually some years ago the Tories were campaigning not to introduce and to get rid of, and basically it makes an enormous difference to the way that things actually operate in terms of catching criminals and bringing them back for justice. So, you know, without that, there is a crime problem.
Also, one of the questions that popped up this week I found fascinating was about asset stripping companies. This is a German company apparently closing down some rail engineering factory. It just seems like the Germans are just pulling their money out of the UK at the moment.
Mr. Paul Sweeney!
The Prime Minister has often spoken about the need for an industrial strategy during her time in office, but the St. Rollox Railway Works in Springburn, affectionately known as the Cali, will be closed by its asset stripping German owner, Mutares, on Friday, ending 163 years of engineering excellence and the jobs of 200 skilled workers.
Shame.
The Scottish and UK governments have both failed to intervene to save this strategic site since the closure was announced late last year. Well, the workforce has been left devastated. Even though the Prime Minister is losing her own job today, it's not too late for her to act now and to instruct the government to do everything it can to find a way to save these vital jobs and this historic railway works. Will she at least commit to doing that?
Yeah.
To the Honourable Gentleman, I recognise the concern that he's showing for his constituency and the worry and concern that there is for those people who are employed in the business that he has referred to. Of course, whenever we see closures of factories, closures of industrial sites, government does act to ensure that support is available for those who do find themselves losing their jobs, should that be the case. But can I also say to the Honourable Gentleman, he says that I talked of having a modern industrial strategy. We have a modern industrial strategy. It is a modern industrial strategy which is setting the background and the framework which will enable the economy of the United Kingdom to be the economy for the 21st century.
Well, this whole idea of industrial strategy has reappeared after years of being told we didn't need one, the market could decide everything. And of course, where the privatisation in this country, we've ended up with Dutch and French state companies running our infrastructure.
So why, is it inevitable that the Germans are going to pull their money out of Britain?
It's not the Germans, it's the company. In actual fact, what's happening as a result of no deal Brexit on the horizon.
Well, German investors have taken over this company.
It's not just German investors, it's Japanese investors, it's all foreign direct investment in this country is ground to a halt because of what's happening with Brexit, and that's probably going to cause a recession, which is going to lose this government its a majority at the next election.
What do you reckon, Gary?
Well, absolutely, and we're hearing, we haven't lost hundreds of thousands of jobs.
I mean, isn't it a bit spiteful? I mean,
the real danger.
This company here, surely in Glasgow, which employs loads of people, is still going to continue to make money. They've just decided, we're just going to spite them.
Their duty is to their shareholders, and basically they're in a position, and that's what private companies are in a position for, looking after their shareholders. If the present government actually make it more difficult for them to make money in this country than in Germany, then basically they're going to put the money back into Germany. And that's exactly what the government are doing. And it isn't that we've lost hundreds of thousands of jobs already. The real danger is the lack of investment in new jobs and new processes coming into Britain. And not just in manufacturing, in science and research, etc. Vast amounts of money are disappearing to Europe, which were coming to this country.
If you're an EU citizen living in the UK, you will need to apply to the EU Settlement Scheme. This means that the rights you currently have will be protected after the UK leaves the EU. The scheme is fully open and you have plenty of time to apply. It is free. To find out more and to apply, visit gov.uk/EU Settlement Scheme. Irish citizens or those with valid indefinite leave don't need to apply.
So we've got a new Prime Minister this week as well, Boris Johnson. Much as everyone predicted, this was going to happen. There's also the talk, Martin, about him. People saying, oh, well, he's got great recognition across the Atlantic and in Britain. But doesn't that just mean he's been groomed for this for years?
Well, indeed he has. He's groomed himself and he's managed to wangle himself into the job, as we all know.
I mean by the press, really. I mean, oh, I can remember, now, listen, this is a David Cameron Prime Ministerial speech at the Tory Party conference. Gosh, we're talking about 6 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, and the BBC immediately put Boris on, first person after the speech is finished, saying, oh, what a great speech by... And, of course, these two were mates in the Bullingdon Club, weren't they?
Well, they all, and it's very incestuous, isn't it? I mean, they've all known each other for years, and they're just passing the ball from one to the other as the economy and everything else goes down the drain.
Okay, you went to Oxford. Is it just as simple as if you go to Eton and Oxford, then you're going to be, and you're one of the boys in the club, then they say to you at the time, they tap you on the shoulder and say, you're going to be great, you're going to be a leader one day, you're going to be a political leader.
When I went in the late 1970s, we had the highest proportion of state school students at Oxford University ever, and it's now gone back to what it was previously. And I remember in the early 1960s, Wilson was saying, we've finished with the Grouse Moore school of government in this country. We're going to have, you know, clever people from all over running things, and the belted earls and lords and everybody, they're gradually going to be squeezed out. But that's certainly not the case, is it? In this country today, we've got exactly the same 18th century style Whig oligarchy running things, and nothing's changed.
Okay, Gary, with Boris, he's famously did these two articles, didn't he? One which was pro-Brexit, the other which was anti-Brexit. It was almost like he's going to flip a coin and say, well, I'm going to be this or that. And so it does give you the impression that he's just totally opportunistic and he'll go whichever way he wishes to.
Absolutely. And as our new leader, Joe Swinson, has said, all that Boris is interested in is Boris. And basically, he's completely unfit to hold any senior office of state. And anyone watching the mess that he made as Foreign Secretary, the worst I think we've ever had, should have been warned then as to how dangerous he
was. But he's more positive than Theresa May. She seems to be a sort of merchant of gloom most of the time.
Well, you know, I mean, I've known undertakers are rather more positive than Theresa May, but that's not really the
What about this whole thing of charisma and people saying he's a bit like Winston Churchill? Is that just his speech writers or is there something to that?
Oh my goodness, what an insult to Winston Churchill. Nobody is ever perfect, but to compare this charlatan to somebody who was a great leader.
Martin, he does seem to try to emulate Churchill a bit in the speeches that he reads.
Well, it's you know, history repeats itself the first time as tragedy, the second time as farce. That's Karl Marx. I mean, the thing about him, what's amazing to me about what they've said in the last 2 days is that they're going to cut taxes for the wealthy. We're going to have 20,000 more police officers. We're going to, schools are going to get all this. And I suddenly, my head's exploded. I thought there was a deficit. I thought the banks collapsed and there was no money for anything. But now we're going to have Brexit. There's money to burn. There's not just one magic money tree. If you look behind Boris, there's a whole forest of them. With loads of money. They were there all along.
The other thing, of course, is he's brought Joe Johnson into his cabinet, who famously resigned because the Conservatives didn't want to have a second referendum, Gary.
Well, rather bizarre. We'll see how some of these appointments actually work out in practice. I think the time to actually start really judging him is when some of these chickens are coming home to roost. I mean, he's proposing to leave the EU without paying our bills. In the end, that generally gets you into difficulties. And I think that Britain is in serious danger if Boris carries on like this, becoming a political pariah, because nobody wants to do business with somebody who doesn't settle their bills.
What about the demise of Jeremy Hunt, for example, Martin? He's out, isn't he? I mean, he's the guy who was really behind this beginning of this tanker wars, but thing by taking over the Iranian tanker in Gibraltar.
Well, he was probably told to do that by somebody else, but let's not go into that. I think what's interesting about this, he got one third of the votes of the Tory party membership, and you'd have thought that he might have been found some kind of a role, but obviously not. That's the obvious big take home from what's happened this week, is this has been absolutely, even people who supported Boris Johnson, who didn't support him enough, have been kicked out. This is definitely, he's got everybody in place who he wants to be in place.
Okay, I'll read out a few of the new...
He's certainly going to take the blame if anything goes wrong now, isn't he?
In the new cabinet, and I'd just like you, either of you, to chip in when I'm finished and, you know, give any particular comments on any of them, really. So we've got Sajid Javid as the new Chancellor, Priti Patel as the new Home Secretary, Dominic Raab as the new Foreign Secretary, Stephen Barclay, the new Brexit Secretary, Michael Gove is Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, Ben Wallace, Defence Secretary, and Liz Truss, International Trade.
Well, if I can just quickly chip in, a lot of these people participated in the pamphlet that came out some years ago called Britannia Unchained. And I can't remember who said it. I think it was Kwasi Kwarteng saying that British workers are the laziest in the world, and that's why we don't get anything done. That's their attitude towards that.
Priti Patel's got a big job here as Home Secretary. She, I seem to remember, was sacked because she had not declared trips to Israel, and she was actually taking a donations towards her trips and things like that from the Israeli government.
Well, that's right. Similarly to Liam Fox, of course, because he was taking his mate Werity into...
So
into
Fox is out, but Morg is in, isn't he? Rhys Morg is in as the leader of the House of Commons.
What's happened with Fox? I'd be interested to hear what Gary's got to say about this, because Liam Fox had a job of being, you know, supposedly international trade secretary or whatever it was. A whole department was created for him, and he went round the world trying to do deals with people, finding out that there was nothing to do in, and he's gradually been educated in office, and he's suddenly realised that we can't just do trade deals with everybody. It doesn't work like that, and that's why he's out, because he's got an element
Gary, what
of
do you make
understanding.
Of, saying goodbye to Liam Fox? He's a local MP, but he's no longer around, is he?
Well, no. The thing is that, yes, he did start to see a bit of reality. And he hung on with May to try and actually pull the sides together a bit, and completely failed, of course. So he can't be around because, as far as Boris is concerned, he's a bad smell.
Kingswood MP Chris Skidmore was Universities Minister, not in the Cabinet, but a junior minister. He's been kicked out, and Joe Johnson, I think it is, has taken over as University Minister. So he's put his brother in rather than Chris.
Well, I suspect that Joe Johnson knows where rather more of the bodies are buried, so I think that's part of the reason why he's been brought in.
Okay, so we've also had Donald Trump weighing in, saying, well done, Boris.
Really good man is going to be the Prime Minister of the UK now, Boris Johnson. Good man. He's tough and he's smart. They're saying Britain Trump. They call him Britain Trump, and people are saying that's a good thing. That they like me over there. That's what they wanted. That's what they need. What they need. He'll get it done. Boris is good. He's going to do a good job. I think Nigel's someplace in this audience. Nigel Farage. He's here someplace. I'll tell you what. He got 32% of the vote from nowhere. Over in UK. Nigel. Thank you, Nigel.
That's Trump, actually Nigel Farage, over at a Trump rally while this is all taking place. Do you think he's going to get on all right with Trump, Martin? I know you're laughing over there. But are these two it's going to be a great rapprochement between Britain
and
America?
Well, it's very interesting. It's good. We're going to have an immediate test of this question of the oil tankers and all the rest of it, aren't we? So never mind Brexit. Are we going to war with Iran to keep the Israelis happy? Come on. You've got 10 seconds to answer. Time's up.
What do you make of Trump and Boris, Gary?
Well, I think that tells you everything you need to know how dangerous Boris actually is when you look at Trump being one of his mates. That really is sickening. Well, I think people who have supported Brexit need to be thinking, hang on, we're moving away.
I mean, there is some evidence, though, that Boris is a bit more realistic. For example, about Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe, Martin. What he says is he's just told it like it is, you know,
that was an absolute mess up. Just to remind the audience what happened there, he was probably told that she was training journalists and that she was basically working for MI6. Then he told everybody what he wasn't supposed to tell
him. So he doesn't know when MI6 are telling him something, he doesn't know he's not allowed to talk. Well, that's on the news.
Can I just make
I thought he was a foreign secretary.
Can I just make another point, which is he said about Trump when Trump first appeared on the scene that he was absolutely unfit to be president. I wonder if Trump knows that. Perhaps we should be playing back, like Trump going on about WikiLeaks.
Well, we can certainly have a go at that. But also, I mentioned there briefly Jacob Rees-Mogg taking over. Well, he's now got a cabinet job as the Leader of the House. What is the role of the Leader of the House, Martin?
Well, I'm not really quite sure.
I know they organise business of the House.
I know Robin Cook became Leader of the House, didn't he, after the...
They negotiate the business of the House with the Speaker. That's one of their jobs.
I think one of the things about being that role is that you sit in cabinet even though you don't have a cabinet responsibility. It's a way of paying Rees-Mogg off. Basically.
But basically, he's a money man. And here is Robert Peston on Wednesday evening talking to Rees-Mogg about the current state of the economy and whether Boris is going to be able to sort it out.
The annual deficit is much lower than it was. It's come down significantly. You've seen with corporation tax that actually having a tax cut has led to more revenue. You've seen a revision by the ONS recently of an extra 0.5% of GDP because they were undercalculating it. So there is money around selectively as long as the money is spent prudently.
But the national debt is still well over 80% of GDP. I would have imagined somebody like you would be nervous about a Prime Minister who might well push up that ratio of debt to the amount that we produce in this country.
I don't think anything he's proposing would push up the ratio of the national debt, and that after 9-10 years of austerity, that you can't continue austerity forever, and the national debt will decline on the current forecasts, and there is some headroom as well.
Well, isn't it interesting? We've suddenly found all this headroom which didn't exist 6 months ago because we need to spend money to win an election. But of course, thinking about the Police Federation people we've had on here over the last few years, all decrying the cuts in police. So experienced police officers have been sacked, and now we're going to recruit 20,000 rookies. Just like that, because we can, because money's no object. Because, of course, as you well know, in America, they've got this off to a T. The right wing can run at any deficit it likes, but the left wing are accused of being profligate if they do.
Gary, what do you make of the newly ennobled Jacob Rees-Mogg?
Well, again, it's a little bit like Trump, isn't it? You know, you judge people by the friends they keep. And I'm afraid he's one of the most odious politicians I've ever seen.
Why do you say that? I mean, a lot of people have got respect for him. I mean, he seems to stick to his principles when it comes to Brexit, for example.
Well, stick to his principles. This was a person who was calling for Brexit and then was actually voting against the deal that his own government had negotiated.
So, Boris's first speech as Prime Minister was yesterday, where he said he was going to bite the bullet.
Whatever deal we do, we will prepare this autumn for an economic package to boost British business.
That's Wednesday.
And to lengthen this country's lead as the number one destination in this continent for overseas investment. And to all those who continue to prophesy disaster, I say yes, there will be difficulties, though I believe that with energy and application, they will be far less serious than some have claimed. But if there is one thing that has really sapped the confidence of business over the last 3 years, it is not the decisions we have taken, it is our refusal to take decisions. And to those who say we cannot be ready, I say do not underestimate this country. Do not underestimate our powers of organisation and our determination, because we know the enormous strengths of this economy in life sciences, in tech, in academia, in music, the arts, culture, financial services. It is here in Britain that we are using gene therapy for the first time to treat the most common form of blindness. Here in Britain that we are leading the world in battery technology that will help cut CO2 and tackle climate change and produce green jobs for the next generation. And as we prepare for a post-Brexit future, it is time we look not at the risks, but at the opportunities that are upon us.
Well, I'm afraid it's nonsense, isn't it? I mean, investment in this country is decreasing. It really is quite frightening. And if he actually takes the jump off the high board into the swimming pool with no water in it, which is what he's proposing to do at the moment, we all suffer very, very badly. And it's not just immediate, it's over a period of years.
I mean, it sounds to me, Martin, like he's doing what you wanted, really, which is, despite the deficit, for the government to start spending its way out.
Well, this is going to be a very interesting general election, isn't it? Because the Labour Party has been accused of spending money that didn't exist, and you know, the money's all gone and all the rest of it. And then as soon as, at this point, they've suddenly swerved, and now money's no object. We can spend any amount of money on anything.
Anyway, yesterday, Boris gave his first speech in Parliament.
No country that values its independence and indeed its self-respect could agree to a treaty which signed away our economic independence and self-government.
As Prime Minister.
This backstop does. A time limit is not enough. If an agreement is to be reached, it must be clearly understood that the way to the deal goes by way of the abolition of the backstop. For our part, we are ready to negotiate in good faith an alternative, with provisions to ensure that the Irish border issues are dealt with where they should always have been in the negotiations on the future agreement between the UK and the EU. I do not accept the argument that says these issues can only be solved by all or part of the UK remaining in the customs union or in the single market. The evidence is that other arrangements are perfectly possible and are also perfectly compatible with the Belfast or Good Friday Agreement, to which we are, of course, steadfastly committed. My team and my right honourable friend, the Secretary of State for exiting the European Union, are ready to meet and talk on this basis to the Commission or other EU colleagues whenever, wherever they are ready to do so.
And the Leader of Opposition, Jeremy Corbyn, pointed out that actually Boris had only just recently, 4 months ago, voted for the backstop, even though now he's decided he doesn't seem to like it at all. Let's also hear from Nigel Farage, who has this to say about he thinks there should be an early general election.
The country voted Leave. The country is still Leave. Arguably, the country is more Leave than it was 3 years ago. And Parliament just simply doesn't accept the result. That's the logjam. That's the problem that we have here. So Boris faces the most enormous challenge. You know, either he says, well, I'll just break my promise and we'll kick the can down the road for a further 6 months. But if he does that, you know, he risks electoral oblivion for the Conservative Party. Or what he does is he goes for a big, bold general election. But here's the problem. Since you and I last spoke, something different has happened in British politics. A new party has come along. It's called the Brexit Party. It won the European elections heavily. It's still polling very high out there in the country. And the only way Boris could win that election, he must come to some kind of accommodation with me and with the Brexit Party.
That's pretty accurate, but it's not going to happen.
Basically, if there's a general election, the Liberal Democrats would be the biggest winners because basically the Tory vote would be split with the Brexit Party, and there's hundreds of seats where we would pick up seats. There's a serious danger, I know it sounds mad, that we would actually be the largest party in Parliament.
Okay.
I think there's no chance of the Tories or Labour being having a majority.
That's our guest, Councillor for Knowle, Lib Dem leader Gary Hopkins. Thank you. Join me after the US-owned Comcast News at 7 as we take our weekly look at world news.
Award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour. Live from the Sky News Centre.